This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. August is National Inventors Month, so this hour we're honoring inventions and inventors of all kinds. If you're an inventor, or you want to be one, this hour could be life-changing. Our guests include two inventors who are experts at helping you get your idea from your shop or your basement or your PC to store shelves and possibly internet sales. One of the first roadblocks faced by new inventors is how to get their gizmo or their idea patented. With so many new patent applications being filed each month, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office is flooded and overworked. There are not enough people to analyze and review those highly technical patents. So what to do? Why not do what scientists do? When they want to judge the merits of a research paper or experiment, they seek outside advice from other scientists, experts in their fields. Peer review is what it's called. Well, the patent office has decided to give it a try, allowing the public to review patent applications. That means anyone who is interested, you can apply thanks to a new approach to applying for patents called peer to patent. And this hour, an intellectual property lawyer from IBM who helped come up with the plan is here to tell us about that and how you might get involved in reviewing patents. But first up, to get us thinking creatively, Amy Smith joins us. She's a mechanical engineer who goes low-tech, about as low-tech as she can, to come up with cheap, simple machines that people from developing nations can use to improve their lives. When Ms. Smith was only a graduate student, she came up with a simple plastic box that keeps microscope slides and test tubes heated without electricity, incubator sans power cord, so people in remote places can find out if they're sick. And now Ms. Smith is on her way to Haiti, where she and her students are testing out a press that makes briquettes for cooking from sugarcane waste. She hopes to come up with something cleaner and safer than wood charcoal. Ms. Smith is a MacArthur Genius Award winner. She's an instructor at MIT's Edgerton Center, where she co-founded the International Development Initiative, a program where MIT students work with local people on what's called appropriate technology. She has also came up with the Ideas Competition, which encourages teams to come up with projects that make a difference. And she joins us today from the studios at MIT. Welcome to Science Friday, Ms. Smith.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about your project in Haiti.
Well, it's a project we've been working on for a while. It started about 4 years ago when we recognized how deforested Haiti is and the fact that people still rely on wood and wood charcoal as cooking fuel. So we wanted to create an alternative fuel, and we looked around to see what sorts of materials might be available. And sugarcane waste and other agricultural wastes are there in abundant supply. And so we've been looking at ways to turn them into charcoal that people can use as cooking fuel. And I've got a student over there now, and I'll be heading down, I think, probably once the hurricane passes by, to start setting up a project that we'll be doing on a grassroots level in the southwest part of Haiti to establish this charcoal making technique throughout the country, we hope.
Mm-hmm. And this will help the health of the folks there?
Yeah, it's actually a great project because it helps in three ways. One, it helps the health because people won't be breathing the smoky fires that are when you burn either wood or other kinds of agricultural waste. It also helps the environment because it doesn't lead to cutting down trees. And then it also helps with people's economic situation. A lot of people there spend almost a quarter of their income on cooking fuel if they use charcoal. And this allows them to make their own charcoal from their agricultural waste material so they can be saving quite a bit of money over the course of a year, and maybe even start up a business to sell to other people. So with those three things in our favor, we're hoping to have good luck with the project.
Yeah, we wish you luck. You teach, actually, kids how to be inventors in MIT in an invention lab, do you not?
Yeah, I teach a class called D-Lab, which stands for Development, Design, and Dissemination. And one of the classes I teach is all about designing products for the developing world. And so we focus on a variety of problems, and students come up with really creative solutions to them.
Mm-hmm. And are they motivated to go to places like Haiti?
Yes, very much so. We probably send about 50 students a year just through my class and through other programs at MIT. It's a couple hundred students who are interested in doing this type of work and really getting the experience of working with their community partners, face to face to move these projects forward.
And you're very creative. You've come up with some really, unusual designs. I know in Honduras you built a water purification system using a toilet valve and an IV drip. Wow.
Yeah. We were sort of in a situation where they had this water tank and a chlorination system, but the chlorination system wasn't working well. And so with both limited materials and limited Spanish, we looked around and tried to find things that we could do to fix the situation. And so I went to the local hardware store and the local pharmacy and managed to communicate well enough to get a plastic gas tank, a IV drip, and a toilet valve. And we were able to build a chlorination system that worked fine. And in fact, by now it's in about, 20 or 30 villages surrounding the neighborhood where we first put it in. So so it's done well. And the local plumber there has become quite the technician of his region as people come to him to learn how to make these things to put into their own water systems.
Now, I think that must be some innate ingenuity, Yankee ingenuity that you have. It's something you really can't teach, is it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you can teach people to look at problems and available materials and to try to figure out solutions to them. I think that one of the things we try to do is we try to encourage people to go back to the very basic principles of what needs to be done rather than looking at existing technologies and how to adapt them. And I think that type of mindset gives you a better chance at getting a simple solution that's effective and doesn't do a whole lot more than what it needs to do, but it does what it needs to do. And that's what I think is real important in this field.
Well, I know you have to catch a plane to Haiti. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us, and good luck to you.
Oh, thanks. It was a pleasure.
Amy Smith, mechanical engineer, instructor, and a designer of technology for developing countries at Edgerton Center at MIT in Cambridge. Speaking of invention, did you know that if you apply today to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, you won't hear back about your patent for as long as 4 years? The patent office is so short of people who can review your idea that it takes much too long to get any idea patented, no matter how good it is or how much we need it. Enter our next guest, David Kappas, intellectual property lawyer for IBM, working with a team of lawyers and law students. He is co-author of a new proposal called Peer to Patent. So now anyone can apply online to review patent applications for the patent office, no special credentials required. And as Mr. Kappas will tell us, thousands of people already have. David Kappas is Vice President and Assistant General Counsel for Intellectual Property at IBM. He joins us today from his office in Armonk. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Ira.
Well, you've reinvented a wheel, so to speak.
Well, that's right. The patent system in the U.S. is just fundamentally important to our national excellence, to our place in the global stream of commerce, and it really deserves to have a way to evaluate all of those submissions that you mentioned, the hundreds of thousands that come into the U.S. Patent Office each year. And a way to do that leverages the 21st century internet infrastructure that's available. And the peer-to-patent review system that we've put together in cooperation with New York Law School is just exactly that. It's simply the patent office meets the 21st century.
How can people apply to become patent reviewers?
Well, it's actually very, very simple. You can go on to the peer-to-patent website, which is available on the World Wide Web. And there is a nice, very simple description, and I'm happy to describe briefly how the process works. You actually don't have to register if you don't want to. You don't have to provide your name if you don't want to, although it's great if people do, because it enables them to be part of the community then. You can view applications, patent applications, that have been submitted into the process by a number of companies, including IBM and others, and you can place comments in the system on them. You can submit documents that you think may be relevant to them. You can comment on anything you might know about the invention, and you can also evaluate and essentially comment on the comments that other people have made about applications in the system. Then what happens is after a period of time, a neutral party takes a look at all the comments that have been made, the documents that have been submitted, and essentially puts together the top comments, the top documents, and forwards those to the U.S. Patent Office so that the U.S. Patent Office Examining Corps can use that material to do a better, faster job of examining and issuing patents.
Mm-hmm. So you can see a patent. You say I can. Well, one of the problems the patent office had is it didn't have enough experts. You know, they were allowing some silly patents to go through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The patent office has got a wonderful core of folks, but as you mentioned, they are just outgunned. They're overwhelmed with the hundreds of thousands of applications coming in, and they just do not have enough resource. Peer to patent is just absolutely spot on, intended to help the patent office by leveraging the millions and millions of expert people around the world who can very easily comment on pending patent applications, saving patent office examiners tremendous amount of time and getting better leverage out of their efforts.
What about people who are afraid that their ideas will be stolen now that they're on the web and people are looking at them?
Right. Well, that's an important concern, and certainly nobody wants that to happen, whether you're a big company or a small company or an individual. We all very carefully want to preserve not having our information taken from us. So the way the system works is it evaluates only those applications that are already published by the U.S. Patent Office. So the applications are already out there in the public domain, so there's no issue once you get into this system, peer to patent. There's no issue of your application somehow being compromised because it's already public. There are some other safeguards in the system, including most principally that the only applications that go into the system are ones where their author, the inventor, agrees to put the application
right
in the system.
Hang on, David, because I got to take a break. We're going to come back and take a short break. Stay with us. We'll talk more about patenting, talk with David and other patent experts for a few more minutes with David. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking about patents and patenting this hour with my guest, David Kappas, Vice President and Assistant General Counsel for Intellectual Property Law at IBM in Armonk, who has created a new way to help out the patent office called the Peer to Patent, which means that you can. David, is this correct? Even small time, not the IBMs and the Microsofts, people who are just plain citizens folks can review patent applications?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ira. And we would just love to see people from all over the world get on the system. To date, over 115,000 people from, I believe, over 100 countries so far have come and visited the system. There have been something like 18,000-plus unique people who've come in and registered on the site, and we've got thousands of comments coming in. So literally, people from all over, large and small companies, individuals, are both encouraged to visit the site and to get involved, and are actually doing that now.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to qualify with any kind of knowledge, or all of your comments will be considered?
There's no qualification requirement. All comments get considered. The system works a little bit like a wiki kind of an idea, where comments that are really good ones get rated highly by other people who are also looking at the comments, and comments that aren't so good get rated more lowly. And so over time, people who are supplying value will have their comments considered more seriously, and those who are supplying less value likewise.
A patent wiki, very interesting idea. Yeah. And this is going to be running for how long? Or is it going to be running forever, or are we in a test period, I guess I'm intending to say.
Right. Well, we're currently in a pilot stage, and it is clearly a test period. The U.S. Patent Office is helping out, and New York Law School, a number of companies are helping out. And as I mentioned, everyone is invited to get on the site and to join. The test period will be running for a period of over a year, and the reason for that is it takes quite a bit of time to get applications in, get them commented on, and find out what's working and what needs to be improved. After that period of time, we'll be trying to move from a pilot phase into a production phase where the USPTO hopefully will be able to roll this system out across very large numbers of applications.
Well, David Kappas, I wish you and your peer-to-patent folks good luck.
Well, thank you very much, Ira.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, bye.
David Kappas is Vice President and Assistant General Counsel for Intellectual Property Law at IBM. He was talking with us from IBM headquarters in Armonk. Staying with our patent thing and theme, it's a patent thing this hour. Let's say you're inventing something. You have invented something. You've got a great idea. You don't know what to do with it. Yeah, where do you go with it from here? Well, sit tight because we now have two experts with us today who are here to tell you what your next step should be. My first guest expert is Cy Timoney, an inventor who writes books about what he makes from cheap, ordinary stuff he finds around the house. Did you ever think you could turn an ordinary penny into a radio? He tells you how to do that. Or control the electricity in your home by using a plastic ring. No special equipment required. Cy Timoney is the man who has done it. A lot of these things, along with many other inventions he makes from normal household items and tools. He has stopped by Science Friday before to tell us how to make invisible ink. Maybe you remember that episode, or many other things that you can find in his book, Sneaky Uses for Everyday Things and Sneakier Uses for Everyday Things. His new book will be out in October. Full disclosure, I wrote the introduction to it, and the title is, you guessed it, Sneakiest Uses for Everyday Things. He joins us today from the studios at NPR in Culver City, California. Hi, Cy.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back. Our second guest expert is also an inventor who has reinvented himself as an inventor educator. 7 years ago, Andrew Krauss founded the Inventors Alliance, a nonprofit group that helps inventors and would-be inventors sell their ideas. Mr. Krauss has teamed up with a very successful inventor, Stephen Key, to found InventRight, a for-profit company that advises investors and inventors. And he joins us today from his office from Mountain View, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Cy, what would be the best way for people to celebrate Inventors Month?
Well, there's so many things that inventors can do nowadays because instead of having to reinvent the wheel and create an all-new invention, there's so many products that come out virtually every month that they can just adapt and decorate and make a small fortune. For instance, the new Wii game machine with the little handheld controller that people are using for so many ways, and people are adapting iPods and flash drives and Bluetooth and Wi-Fi devices. And now with programmable IC chips, they can do things electronically that only big businesses could do. So on the web now that you can check patents and trademarks right from home, you can, if you want to develop your own idea, you can not only build it mechanically, but if it's too complex, you can use free or low-cost animation software to get your message across and also contact businesses and people for licensing to create an alliance, all for little or no money.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. I'll say that again. If you need patenting or invention advice and guidance, 1-800-989-8255. We're here to help you out. Andrew Krauss at the Inventors Alliance. You get calls every day from inventors who need advice, right?
I do, and I hope we're going to be able to take some calls today.
What are their biggest problems? What do they need most?
I think their biggest problem is they make assumptions about the process. So it's very important for inventors to invent products, but not invent the process of selling their ideas. So I think the best thing an inventor can do is to model their sales techniques after successful inventors and not make that part up, because otherwise it can be very costly.
So you have an idea, and where is the next step?
I'll give you an example. Yeah. Most inventors think the next step is to run down to a patent attorney, plunk down a bunch of cash, and say, here, get me a patent. But that's not the right way to go about things. And I'm qualified to say that because I've been running Inventors Alliance for 7 years now. The first step is not patenting the idea, but doing your market research. So sometimes, to give you an example of one of the things that we teach at InventRight, is if you have a hammer that hits nails straight every time, the best thing you can do is go down to your local hardware store chain where you want to ultimately see your idea, and look at the world of hammers. Look at all the hammers. Look at the packages. Look at what the material they're made out of. Most importantly, look at all the different benefits. Maybe one is heavy. Maybe one is light. Maybe one has a really sticky grip that you like. And look at all the benefits, and then figure out where your product is going to be on the shelf and how it compares to all these other products.
So is marketing more important than the idea?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say the idea, and this isn't what inventors like to hear, but I tell inventors what they don't like to hear all the time, the idea is maybe 5 to 10% of it. Patenting is maybe 5 to 10% of it. The rest of it, 80% of it, is knowing how to sell it.
Hmm.
Good ideas are a dime a dozen.
Cy, do you agree?
Yes, and one thing I learned recently, too, is that, and Andrew can follow up on that, is that some famous inventions don't even have patents. They have trademarks for various reasons. For instance, the hula hoop is such a simple device in the sense it's just a circular hoop. And they've been using it in different countries for many years. But the title hula hoop can be trademarked. And in some cases, like probably the world's most recognizable invention per se or product, Coca-Cola, does not have a patent because when they would do that, they'd have to reveal their secret ingredients, but it does have a trademark. So there's many ways for people to get in contact with, like, Inventors Alliances to find out what's the best way to go.
1-800-998-2555 is our number. We've got an inventor on the line. Let's Guy from Phoenix. Hi, Guy.
Hey, how you doing, Ira? Nice to finally get to talk to you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I have an invention in my head, okay? I am an online video gamer, all right? I have friends all over the world. I want to take a video game and turn it into real life, okay? It's a first-person tactical shooter. I know the people I need to talk to be able to get the authorization to do it. My problem is the weapons themselves. I want to take authentic-looking weapons with actual recoil, but they shoot lasers out of the end. Now, I don't know how to find out about this stuff, and, I mean, you were saying something at the beginning of the show about, you know, finding companies that could help you with this and the animation aspects of it and stuff like that. I'm just, like, lost as to where to go with an idea that's been stuck in my head for 4 years and driving me up the wall.
Andrew Krauss, any advice?
Yeah, I mean, you can team up with other people that know the parts of the technology that you don't. But you know what a lot of inventors don't realize? That there's basically two paths you can go down. You can venture, which is just a fancy way of saying starting your own company. You can license, which is basically renting your intellectual property, your patent, copyright, or trademark to a company, providing that they meet certain criteria. They sell so much, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, you know, every year. Then they get to continue to rent your idea, and you get a royalty for every unit that you sell. It sounds like this would be a great match for licensing, not venturing, because you probably don't want to start your own video game company, right? Right, Guy?
No, I'm not into making a video game. I want to take a game that already exists.
Right.
It's a very, very popular video game, and they've made multiple, number two, number three, number four, so on and so forth. And I want to take that, but I want to take one of the maps that's on the game and put it into a real-life situation, a real building with it identical. People walk into the room that is this map and just be completely amazed. You know, it's like, I've seen this. I know this map. This is on that game. You know, I play it every day or on the weekends or whatever, you know, and to actually see it. I mean, it's a thrill to even think about doing this and hearing, people, you know, when I talk to them and tell them my idea, you know, to try to get some information from them, they're just like, dude, if you could do this.
Well, you're talking about creating a theme park of
It would be a family-based theme, you know, family-based entertainment
But you're shooting up a lot of people.
There's so much on the invention part that has to be done.
Yeah.
That's where I am lost. The weapons. You know, the military has this stuff called Miles gear. Okay? And basically, they put a box on the end of their M16 that shoots out a laser signal, and they use live blanks in their weapons.
Guys, here's my advice. This is Andrew. You need to first figure out who you're going to license this to and how that deal is going to work. Before inventors spend way too much time in patents and prototypes before they figure out who they're going to cut the deal with. So the first thing you need to do is go down to the marketplace, which you understand the market fairly well, but you haven't pinpointed who you're going to license this to, who you're going to rent this idea to. You need to understand that first before you spend 1 cent or one, you know, bit of time figuring out how you're going to implement the technology. And really, one of the things that we teach at InventRight, and successful inventor Stephen Key has been teaching this for a long time. It took him a while to figure this out, and it's common sense. You don't need a patent or a prototype to sell your idea. With a provisional patent for $100, you can write it in common English, allows you to fish off the end of the pier for 1 year. It allows you to say patent pending. Okay, right there, that's $100, right? You got your protection. Next part of it, a sell sheet, because you're not selling your prototype and you're not selling your patent. You're selling the benefits of your idea. So you protect yourself with a provisional for $100. You do a sell sheet, which is a one-page sheet with the big benefits of your idea, maybe a picture of your product. You can fake it in a picture. You can cannibalize other products. You can have a rendering done by a college art student, something like that. You can do this very affordably. Let's say that's another $80 if you have a college student do it. And then you need to figure out what companies are potential licensees for your product. What companies are you going to call? And that's very easy to do. So if you give me kind of a better idea of what this product is, I could explain to you what companies you need to call. But you can sell your idea before you've made it. That's what I'm saying. And it's a big mistake inventors make to go out and spend $3,000 to $20,000 on a patent and another $5,000 on a prototype before you've got any interest from somebody in that industry is suicide. And to see inventors make that mistake every single day.
Talking about patent advice this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Andy Krauss, inventor, educator, and co-founder of InventRight.com, and Cy Timoney, inventor and author who's written 3 books about invention. His latest coming out is Sneakiest Uses for Everyday Things. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Cy, do you have to worry about any of this stuff with just making little gadgets from common household items?
Well, that's the beauty of sometimes if you're an inventor. And in some cases, you may want to make a physical model. You may want to license it with another company or get a patent and go from there. But in other cases, inventors, if they broaden their minds and open up their thinking about what inventions are, there's many other avenues. You can write, like I do, and get a copyright to protect your interests. You can produce items and sell them at craft fairs and like Make Magazine's Maker's Fair. You can create computer software. That's inventions. You know, those are inventions too. So, and you can sometimes show your inventions and by creating a DVD. In other words, Your creativity doesn't have to be in the normal model of a mechanical device. And in some cases, some people are more fit to write, photograph, make a video, a movie. And that way, and there's protection schemes for all of those. So that way, you're still protected, but you can go with what feels good for you. In my case, I like adapting things, just like Amy Smith does. And in her case, she doesn't even get a license, but great, you know, it is great that she gets great awards. I mean, she's won over $500,000 in awards, and she's very altruistic, and she's saving lives, too. So there's so many avenues for inventors to take advantage of their creativity and to make alliances, and like Andrew said, to find out what your market is. Do you want to go all the way with this? How much money do you want to spend? Or, like in my case, I like writing about it, getting ideas, adapting them, and putting them on paper and sometimes video, and, distributing them that way.
And, of course, that was a great idea you mentioned about videos. Now you can do animation and computer graphics to illustrate exactly what you want to do without ever having to build it.
Right. And that animation software, which used to be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, there's so many versions of it now, almost shareware versions practically. where in the past an inventor couldn't get his message across, and now if he or she can't do it themselves, there's so many people that can show them how, where that way they can work out some of the kinks before they spend money in machine tooling and, you know, mm-hmm. tool and die and things like that, and then work those things out and come up with even with better ideas.
We're talking with Cy Timoney and Andrew Krauss this hour. We're going to have to take a short break to talk with lots more folks about the inventions. I see you're on the phones, you're on the line, you're looking for some advice. We'll get to you. Try not to get too detailed about because we can't really give you all that detailed advice. It's almost like when we ask people for medical advice, the inventor advice gets even more detailed sometimes. So stay with us. We'll give you as much advice as we can after this break. Don't go away. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking about inventions and inventors. If you're an inspiring or aspiring or, as Thomas Edison might say, a perspiring inventor, this is the hour for you. Here's your chance to hear from two experts on how to take your ideas from your kitchen table or from your computer to the market, perhaps. Cy Timoney, inventor and author, who's written three books about invention. The latest coming out is Sneakiest Uses for Everyday Things. Andrew Krauss, co-founder of InventRight.com and president of InventorsAlliance.org. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Andrew, you know, we were talking about making these computer models and things now using mm-hmm. graphics. You know, wouldn't YouTube be a perfect place to show off something now if you want to get somebody interested to see what you do?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, you can put your video up on YouTube, you know, and have people
absolutely.
Come and look at it.
Well, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I can't offer legal advice, but in the United States, it's still a first-to-invent country. So once you disclose your invention, you have to patent it within a year.
Uh-huh.
I would say it depends on your approach. If you're looking to sell it yourself, fantastic, go for it. If you're planning to license it to a company and have them sell it, I wouldn't recommend putting a video up on YouTube. I'd recommend a password-protected website that you could show a select few manufacturers because there are some legal issues there.
A good point. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Elizabeth in Tallahassee. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. How are you doing?
How are you?
I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to call it a comment, actually. Not so much a question, but I have been learning about some inventions that my grandfather made, some having to do with some military patents, actually, and just wanted to comment about the unsung inventors that exist. My grandfather had, he was a captain, and he came up with the, I guess, first prototype for the, oh gosh, I'm like,
you're nervous.
Going blank here. Yeah, I'm a little nervous. But he came up with the prototype for the aircraft carrier runway.
No
or
kidding.
Landing strip.
No kidding.
And he also invented the exploding bolts,
oh,
which
that they
allow
use,
the space shuttle to disengage, I believe.
Yeah, they've been using those for decades, not just
yeah.
for the space shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was it's just fascinating to me, and I just think that these guys and men and women who contribute to the world of science that don't always take credit for it, or they deserve a little bit of some props.
Well, we have the right guy on to talk about that because Andrew Krauss, is an inventor and educator, and believe me, he must know about a lot of these people you never hear of. And they're all over the place.
As his granddaughter, just now learning about all of these things that he was able to contribute and thinking, gosh, why didn't I inherit some of that genius,
And I think you could follow in his footsteps. It's not, you were talking about Thomas Edison earlier, how he would come up with ideas, because I realize about 50% of the people that I talk to when I tell them I run an Inventors Association, they say they come up with an idea at one point or another. But then there's the other 50%, and I'm sure some of your listeners would like to know how to come up with ideas.
Yeah.
And so it's very important not to force it. Very few people can come up with ideas when they're stressed. What Thomas Edison used to do, he'd sit in his lounge chair with a pool ball in his hand. And he would just relax. I mean, almost to the point of falling asleep. And that is at the best point. And so for some people, that's a shower. It's the porch. It's in the park lying under a tree. And he would think of all his best ideas that way. And if the pool ball fell on the floor, it would wake him up. And then he'd pick it back up, and he'd do it all over again.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like
people can come up with ideas, and I think you could follow in the footsteps of your grandfather?
Yeah. My grandfather. His name is Bertel Carlson.
Well, he's now immortalized, Elizabeth. Thanks to you. Thanks a lot for calling.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-989-8255. Si, how do you come up? I find that when I'm driving, speaking of it's a relaxing drive, I come up with all kinds of ideas. Where do yours come from?
Well, I come up with ideas just by reading, experimenting, playing around with things. Just when I think I'm out of ideas for another book, I come across a new category. And when she spoke about unsung heroes, there's a great book called Women Invent by Susan Casey. And I learned so much about women's inventions way back in the 1800s up to the present, of so many things that they developed and enhanced and invented. So she may want to check that out.
Good
it ties into what she said about her grandfather. But like Andrew said, in some cases, people have a hard time coming up with inventions. And in other cases, you come up with them every 5 minutes. And then there's the thing of what do you do with it? But it's also important. An idea is one thing. I can think of many things to do. But then when you start to implement it, then you find out it may not work well. And yet, through that process, you learn something else. So just use the internet, get around different types of people. Andrew said, go to different stores, touch hammers, and go to toy stores, go to makers' fairs, craft fairs, and you won't have any problem coming up with adaptations and ideas. I mean, we're in the age of Bluetooth and USB accessories and flash drives and iPods and iPhone. There's so many. Just look at a kiosk in a mall that sells cell phone accessories, from the cases to the adapters and to accessories for iPods to give them speakers. I mean, coming up with ideas in this day and age to enhance already existing ideas is a cottage industry.
Well, Gina,
yeah, that's a very important point. I mean, a lot of people think it needs to be a completely new idea, but almost all inventions are just adaptations, like Si said, of existing products.
Gina in Kansas City has an idea, right, Gina?
Yeah, I do. Thanks. How are you?
How are you?
Good. Hey, my idea basically is my son plays with little Nintendo DS games, and the game chips are literally a little bit bigger than my thumbnail. And they cost, $20 to $30, and we lose them all the time. And so I basically am thinking about something that would be almost like a keychain, and you could retrofit something that would go on each game, and then you could hook it on the keychain when you weren't playing.
Uh-huh.
But my question is, do I need to make a prototype of it, or I don't even know where to start?
I've got some input on that. Basically, some ideas you can protect, some ideas you can't. My gut instinct's telling me you can't protect that idea. So either you start your own company and you manufacture this idea,
right,
or you come up with an incredibly clever keychain. If it's incredibly clever, there might be some protection you could get, and then you can license it, and some other company can worry about manufacturing, marketing it, all that, and give you a percentage in each sale. So I hate to say that there's not a way to figure out how to make a really unique keychain that holds that chip like cooler and better than anything else. But I have a hard time imagining that. But if you can do that, then it's licensable. Otherwise, you need to start your own company and sell it yourself.
Okay.
Good
That's
luck to you.
That's a tough one.
Good. Join the crowd, Gina.
Yeah, thanks. So it sounds like a great idea. I just couldn't quite figure out how to put it on paper.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. Get some help, some drawing help maybe.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, good luck. Have a good weekend. 1-800-989-8255. Is our number. Let's continue. A lot of women on the phone today, inventors. I don't mean to be sexist about it, but there are a lot of women with great ideas, and we don't hear from them. I'm glad we are. Anne in Jacksonville. Hi, Anne. Anne, are you there? Oh, come on. Anne in Jacksonville? No. All right. I guess we'll have to go. We'll have to go to, let's go to San Antonio. Hi, Justices, is it?
Yes, my name is Justias Weed. I'm from San Antonio. I'm a mother of three, and my husband's deployed, and so I'm very busy. My hands are very full, and I just have an idea that I need to have at home. And so I don't know how to go about creating this object that I need, and I need to have it at home right now. So how do I start? What do I do? It's a very clever idea.
And you don't want to give it away by telling us anything about it.
No, I don't tell anyone my idea. All I know is that it's a very good idea. Moms need this. I know they need it. I need one right now. How do I start? What
Andrew,
do I do?
I'm sure you've heard this before.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Cy seems like he's really good at prototyping. Do you have any prototyping tips, Cy?
Well, what I would highly suggest she and some of your listeners do, in yesterday's New York Times, there's an article about dads coming up with inventions because more dads, inventions for child care, because more dads are helping out with child care. And it gives about four or five examples of dads that have created or adapted things to make it easier for child care. So if you get that article, it's online, or you might be able to go to a library, the Thursday New York Times. It was very, very informative about the problems that they had, what they wanted to do, how they created their little prototypes, and then how they brought it to market. So I would highly suggest that, and it's a nice, easy read.
Good idea. Thanks for calling. Good luck to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Daniel in Des Moines. Hi, Daniel.
Hello there.
Hi there.
I create a...
Are you there, Daniel? Well, I guess we lost him. Cy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What if people, Daniel's dropped off. We lost actually all of our callers, so we must have a technical glitch. How do people find investors? You know, you have an idea. How do you find an investor for a product if you're looking for one?
Well, step one would be to first somehow protect it, get an interim trademark or interim patent first, and, you know, write up and create some kind of model for your idea on paper or with software. And then what you can do is you have to look at companies that already produce similar products. And by that research process, you'll come into a list of people. Mm-hmm. And also, there are inventor alliances like Andrew's group. There are legal advice that you can get, too. So that'll be no problem. And the Internet is a great tool for all inventors as far as creating an alliance and trying to get a licensor. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Andrew has some ideas on that, too.
Yeah, we've lost all our phone lines for some reason, and Andrew was on the line. So we're going to have to just talk with you, Cy. There's a lot to talk
about.
Oh, he's back. Okay.
There he is.
There he is. We were talking, Andrew, about how do you find a good investor? Well, you know, you have an idea. Will they find you?
It's really hard to find people that want to fund inventions because a person with an idea isn't very fundable. You have to have a team that knows how to market it, manufacture it, do all that. And quite often a lot of inventors are moms or engineers, and they don't know anything about business. So is somebody going to hand you $1 million? Probably not. You need to put a team together to do that.
Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can get another phone call in before we have to go. Back to the phones. Let's go to Barbara in California. Hi, Barbara.
This is actually Gary. Sorry about that.
Okay, go ahead, Gary.
I'm wondering what Cy and Andrew have actually invented themselves, and in studying inventors, what they've learned about sort of pursuing their own ideas and creating realities out of maybe ideas that wouldn't have gone somewhere, something it wouldn't have created anything in the past.
Let me first remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Cy, you've invented a lot of things.
Yeah, I created a ring that basically has a magnet on the top that I use to turn on devices, including starting up my car. Instead of having a cutoff switch that I would lean over under the dash or under the seat to turn on, which is kind of cumbersome, I just aim my ring at a portion of the dashboard, and behind there's a magnetically sensitive switch. And I used to call that the Magna Power Ring. And I put that idea in my books, Sneaky Uses for Everyday Things. And, in fact, there's a little video of it. When you were speaking of the YouTube videos, I put some videos at my sneakyuses.com mm-hmm. website. And I even uploaded a video to the Science Friday website about a radio-controlled jacket that you can use the parts from a $5 toy and use it so that your jacket can control things, too.
Yeah. And are you making more videos? You find as you invent things, you're making videos out of them?
Yeah, I make videos because I do a lot of demonstrations at schools and libraries, and mm-hmm. I have so many things that I show quickly that I wanted a way to for people to come back home later and also spread the word. So I created 9 videos, and I uploaded them to YouTube, and there's a link at my site, too. And that way people can see how to do these techniques, like how to test their money. You know, all you need is a magnet and bring it near a currency, a dollar bill, and you can see if it's counterfeit or not. So making little videos with inexpensive digital cameras is a very good tool to get your message across.
Now I got Barbara on the line. Quickly, Barbara, we're running out of time.
Real quick, is I want to make a prototype. I'm not sure whether to do it in plastic or in metal, and I just don't really know. And when I do find someone, if I even knew how to get one, do they have to sign something, or should I make them be quiet or secretive or what?
Yes, it's called a work-for-hire agreement, Barbara, when somebody signs something saying that it's your invention.
Work-for-hire, okay.
Yeah, you can probably
pick
one.
And the agreement just says what, essentially?
It basically says that, you know, you own the invention, and any improvements that they make, you own. That's very important.
Okay. All right. And how do you think there's a good way to start with that? Do I just go to a local machine shop or something?
That's such a specific question. I mean, it all depend on your invention. I need to know more about your invention.
Okay.
Barbara, why not make a video of it or an animation? Then you
that's so fancy. I don't think I can do that.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. One last question for you, Andrew. We see all these ads on the late night TV shows for, you've got an invention? Call us. Should we?
No. And I won't go into detail because I don't want to be sued, but there's a great website out there called InventorEd.org, and it talks about these companies, and I think he's a reporter, so I highly recommend that anybody that's even thinking about getting involved with these companies, go to that website. That's what he does. What I do is I teach people to sell their ideas.
Mm-hmm. So you take already made inventions?
Well, what I do at InventRight, basically my partner, he's licensed over 20 products. And we just basically consolidated, what does he do to sell his ideas? How do you do your market research? How do you get into companies? What do you say? You know, and then we basically put that into a course.
I get it.
And we teach people how to sell their ideas. Through my Inventors Association, we give people the opportunity to get all points of view from different inventors. We had Colin Roche speak back in November. He had the largest color spread in the Wall Street Journal 4 days before he spoke. He had an ergonomic pen that was kind of like a wishbone that was ergonomic. And, you know, they come and they speak and they say, hey, here's how I made my millions, and here's some mistakes I made, here's some things I did right, and here's how you can do the same. And that's very, very important because ideas are a dime a dozen. People that know how to sell them are really hard to come by. And my mission in life is educating inventors as to how they can bring their products to market. Ideas are great, but if you don't know how to bring them to market, people are never going to know about them.
So I got 10 seconds. When is your last book coming out, your latest book?
It'll be out in late October. It's available online in every bookstore called Sneaky S Uses for Everyday Things, and I thank you for writing the foreword to it, Ira.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to read and actually try some of the stuff you've got in your books. It reminds me of my teenage days. Cy Timothy is an inventor, author in Torrance, California. He's written written 3 books about invention. The latest is The Sneakiest Use for Everyday Things. Andrew Krauss is an inventor educator, co-founder of InventRight.com and president of InventorsAlliance.org. Thanks again, gentlemen, for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
Kimberly,
thank you.
You're welcome. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers here in New York are Neil Rausch from Anoli Weatherall. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Key Molesky. Serve over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We're blogging and podcasting. If you want to see one of Cy Timoney's videos, it's up there, plus all kinds of other videos. If you got an invention video you want to send us, there's a great idea. Take a video of your invention if you want to expose it to everybody. We'll put it up on our website for you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.